Okay, today's daf is Bechorot Kavtet. We're going to start at the Mishnah at the bottom of Kavchet Amud Bet. We were talking about judges making mistakes and what level of responsibility they have. So yesterday we saw the distinction between a regular judge and a mumche lerabim or a mumche lebeitin. That if it's a regular judge, then he's responsible for his decision. We don't change the decision, but he has to compensate the person who lost. Then we ended with, is this because we hold like Rabbi Meir, who says if you indirectly cause damages, you're responsible, and therefore we make him responsible? And the Gemara then said, no, you could actually explain that it's not like Rabbi Meir, and actually you're not responsible for indirect damages, in which case they very much limit the case of the Mishnah, that it would only be in a case, you only have to compensate if you actively pass the money from one hand to the other, right? Or you actively cause their object to be tameh by throwing a sheretz on it. Or, you know, those weird cases we saw where he took his tameh item, mixed it with the fruits, and really it turned out he claimed it was pure and really it was impure, and he mixed it up and messed up all his stuff. So it would have to be a case, in other words, again, part of the problem is, you know, if we don't hold like Rabbi Meir, then the Mishnah doesn't make sense. Or you basically say that the Mishnah is, and it's either the Mishnah is Rabbi Meir and you are responsible for indirect damages, or the Mishnah doesn't hold like Rabbi Meir and it would have to be that the Dayan did something direct. Now we're going to talk about the Mumche. So a Mumche lebeitin is patur milashaleim, or Mumche lerabim, some sort of expert, which again, it's not so clear what makes someone an expert. I saw a definition, the Aruch HaShulchan has a definition where he says if, for instance, the city were to hire you to be the rabbi of the city, that would show you're a mumche lerabim, right? If you get hired to do the follow, although we're going to talk about the problem with hiring in a few minutes, but in other words, if you're appointed, let's say, forget about hiring, you're appointed to be in a position of leadership, you know, based on your expertise and Torah knowledge, then that will make you a mumche lebeitin or a mumche lerabim. So if that's the case, then you're exempt. So now we're going to hear a case about that in the following Mishnah. Uma'aseh b'para shenitla ha'em shala. Okay, now we're off topic. We're not talking about b'chor anymore. We're not so far off topic. We're still in the animal category. There's a para that they took out the womb, okay, a hysterectomy. V'hechila Rabbi Tarfon l'klavim. And Rabbi Tarfon said, this can only be eaten by dogs because it's a treifa. Ubama said l'fnei chachamim b'yavne. They must have appealed the case, and they brought it to the chachamim in Yavne, right? Obviously, Rabbi Tarfon is in the category of a mumche l'rabim. Then they brought it before the chachamim in Yavne, v'hitiruha, and they said it's mutar. And they said, Sha'amar todus harofe, they quote this famous rofe, okay, who's quoted in other places. He was a doctor that the rabbis often turned to for his medical opinions. He says, "Ein para v'chazira yotza mi'Alexandria shel Mitzrayim she'ein chotchim ha'em shela b'shvil shelo teled." He said, the Todos HaRofei said that in Alexandria, this was known, that in Alexandria, they wouldn't, okay, the city in Egypt, they wouldn't, we've seen this before, they wouldn't let the parot and the chazirim leave their city, right, the cows and the pigs, without taking off their wombs, because they didn't want them to reproduce, because they had a special breed, and they were worried that if they let it out, other people would, right, it's like copyright, other people would breed their animals, and they didn't want that to happen. So if they sold it to anybody, they would remove the wombs. Now, obviously, if they're selling these animals, nobody would buy them without their wombs if they were going to die. So what does this prove? By removing, right, by doing a hysterectomy, we all know this, right? It doesn't cause the death of the animal. So therefore, Rabbi Tarfon was wrong. It wasn't a treifa. So Amar Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon now says, halcha chamorcha Tarfon. He talks to himself, right? He says, Tarfon, there goes your donkey. Okay, which means what? First of all, there was no donkey here. But what he means is, what?
He has to pay damages.
Exactly. I'm going to have to pay damages, right? There goes the loss of my donkey.
Why did he know that it's not on the list of treifot?
Right. It's a good question. It's a very good question. Why didn't he know? This is pretty basic. This wasn't listed in the treifot. So some of them say that, I saw an answer to that. I have to remember now why. why, if it's obvious it wasn't in the list, but there's still, like, even though it wasn't, like, we talked when we learned trefot, there's very specific lists, but also there's things that could be derived from other things, and I forget why.
It's not an ethical thing to do. Maybe that's the problem.
What's not ethical? To take out the womb. Right. That's a separate thing. But yeah, but still, it wouldn't make it a trefa that you'd say it's forbidden to be eaten. I don't remember why, since it's not on the list, he thought it was. Now, it's unclear what actually caused him to make this error, especially when it's something that's pretty obvious. So in any case, what do they say? He says, oh no, now I have to pay. Amar lo Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Tarfon, atam mumche l'rabim, v'cholam mumche l'beitim, patur, I'm sorry, mumche l'beitim, v'cholam mumche l'beitim, patur milashalem. Right? You're an expert of the court. Because you're an expert of the court, you're exempt. So now the Gemara is going to ask a question. So this is a good example of a case where a mumche l'beitim makes a mistake. But now the Gemara says, and this is kind of along your lines, what you said, Sherry, a minute ago, which is the Gemara says, but there's another reason why he should be exempt. Why did the Mishnah say that? He erred in something that's explicit in the Mishnah. Okay? In other words, if you teach something that goes against an explicit Mishnah, okay, now here, first of all, Rabbi Tarfon lived before there was a Mishnah, okay, but it's not exactly true because there were Mishnayot, right? There were, it was all passed on orally. The Mishnah just means Rabbi Yehuda Nasi put it together. But it's also not necessarily an explicit Mishnah. So some explain that what it means is something that's totally obvious. Okay, like you said, doesn't he know? Isn't this totally obvious? So now they say another way. Okay, well, if you remember, what did we say earlier? Hadana tadim v'zikat chayav chayavet hazakai. Right? Masha asa asui. You can't return the judgment. Whatever's done is done, and therefore you have to pay out of pocket. In this case, it's known. Right, and our exception, the Mishnah, was if you're a mumcha lebeitin, then you don't have to pay. But now they say if you're to'ev dvar Mishnah, it's known that chozer, the judgment, it just, you know, you undo the judgment very simply. Okay, if you made such an obvious mistake, then we redo the judgment. Why is that? Why are you not responsible? This goes back to when we learned Adam Uav Olam, a person's always responsible for his actions, no matter what. So we talk there, the only time you're not, you know, the Mishnah starts off, you're always responsible for damages. And then it proceeds to give all sorts of cases where you're not responsible. Like you put the cot in a shidur or a beam and someone breaks it, and whatever, then, okay. So anyway, what the explanation generally we talked about then was that sometimes someone else is more responsible than you. You might not be responsible if someone comes to court and you rule something that's totally preposterous, so they shouldn't have listened to you in the first place. They should be smart enough. And this is a good example of, you know, there's always that question when we say, lo yastorman adavar she'er gidu l'cha yaminu smol, right? Are you supposed to blindly follow and just ignore what they say? You know, in other words, ignore the fact that you think, right? There's drashot that say itself in the reverse. Some drashot say, if they tell you about small as yamin, and yamin is small, and you know that they're wrong, you still have to listen to them. And that would kind of show blindly follow. But some of them say, no, if it appears to you that it's that way, but not if it actually is. If it's really not the case, you don't have to follow them. And you have to kind of use your own intelligence and do your own research. You know, like in this case, I guess the person was smart. They brought it to another court because they thought he was making a mistake. So now they say, so why didn't the Mishnah say that? That would have been a good explanation. So they say, Chadeva od kamar. The Mishnah meant that and another thing. In other words, it meant Chadeva d'tav d'var Mishnah chozer. Number one, right, even though it didn't say it, right, that's obvious. Is again, it's funny. They're saying, just like when you rule incorrectly, it should be obvious to the other person. Likewise, the fact that the Mishnah neglected to say this, it's obvious they meant that, okay? Inami b'shikul hada'at ta'ita, and maybe you would say that he made a mistake in terms of his shikul da'at. How do you translate that? His
weighing of an opinion.
Okay, the way he weighed the opinions. Then you would say, in other words, even if you say he's not to'ev dvar Mishnah and he's still to'ev b'shikul hada'at, then mumche lebeitin atav v'chol mumche lebeitin patur milashalem. Either which way, you're going to be patur. New Mishnah. Now we're going to get into a very interesting issue. Okay, these tapim really have basic concepts here about when do we think... first we're going to talk about getting paid for all sorts of things. Okay, you're allowed to get salary for certain things, like teaching, like famous question. Now we're going to learn, we're going to start with Hanotel Sachar Liot Ro'et HaBechorot. Okay, and from here, we're going to get into also what are we concerned that people will lie about? Okay, what would make someone lie for money? Okay, and what wouldn't? So Hanotel Sachar Liot Ro'et HaBechorot Ein Shochatin Apiv Ela Imken Yamumche Ki'ila B'Yavne She'itiru lo B'ya'am She'itiru lo Chachamim liot notel arba isarot lebeimah dakah v'shisha legasa bein tam ubein balmu. Very interesting Mishnah. It says, you're not, if someone takes money to check bechorot, what does it mean to check? To see if they have a mum. Remember, what happens? If they have a mum, the kohen can eat it. So if you go pay someone to check, you're not allowed to trust his opinion. You can't go shech that animal. If he says it's got a mum, you can't shech the animal based on what he says if you paid him. Unless he was a mumche like Ila B'Yavne, that the rabbis allowed him to take, and they allowed him a particular amount of money per animal, four isarot for a behemadaka, for a small animal, and six for a large animal, whether it was a tam and whether it was a muat. Okay, so now, a few questions. Number one, what are we concerned about? It's obviously we're concerned if you pay the guy's going to lie. Right? If you're paying him, then he's going to give you the answer that you want. What's the answer that you want? You want it to be a baal mum. Right? I was thinking, I recently brought something to a shatnez lab, right? And you have to pay. Right? You have to pay for a shatnez lab. Right? And you might say, well, maybe if I'm paying him, he's going to want to give me the answer that I'm looking for, right? That it's not shatnez, right? That maybe there's a concern that because I'm paying him, he's giving me the answer that I want. So we're going to talk a little bit about what the concerns here are about him lying and why we're not concerned otherwise. But anyway, number one, we're concerned that he's going to lie unless he's a mumche like Ila. Now, what was unique about Ila? So Rashi says, "Dechasidhu v'lo nechshav b'kach." He's someone that's so trustworthy, such a pious person, that we're not worried he's going to lie. That's one interpretation. Another interpretation is that, no, Ila was the mumche when it came to, right, notice the word, it didn't say he was a chassid ki Ila B'Yavne, it said he was a mumche like Ila B'Yavne. What does a mumche have anything to do with it? Still a mumche could lie, take money for it, but because he was a mumche, and here the issue is not so much that he's going to lie, the issue in this interpretation connects a little better with the upcoming Mishnayot, and this is the Ramban's interpretation. He said, because he was an expert, everybody brought him their animals to check. Now imagine, right, if you're a person who gets an animal once every 3 weeks, so that's not a lot of time, it's not a big deal. But if you're the expert, then people are coming to you all the time. If people are coming to you all the time asking questions, well then you can't afford to, you can't get hold a job because you're so busy answering questions. So if you're the mumche and this becomes your full-time job, or part-time job even, then you can get paid for it. And then it's a different issue, and it doesn't have to do with we suspect him for lying, it's that he has no choice but to, you know, that's the only way he can make a living, and therefore you can do it. Okay, so now the first question of the Gemara is my time. Why is there a difference between the Behemah Dakah and the Behemah Gasa in terms of how much you get paid? So they say, very simply, high nefesh tirche v'hai lo nefesh tirche. It's a small animal, it's a little easier to check for blemishes. First of all, there's less places to check, and it's probably easier to hold the animal down while you're checking. The bigger animal, it's obviously harder work, and therefore he got paid more for that. Now the Gemara asks, Bein tam u bein baal mum. From here, right, he could get paid for either one. So now they say, Bishlama baal mum, I understand the baal mum, mishum de kasharele. Because the baal mum, one second, according to this, right, the concern here, okay, the Bein Tam, Bein Baal Mum is going back to the beginning. You can take, right, you can't take sachar for checking an animal, whether it's a Baal Mum or whether it's a Tam. So now they say, I understand why you can't check a Baal Mum. Mishum, in other words, if, again, what does it mean? To tell someone it's a Baal Mum. If you check for money and the answer is it's a Baal Mum, so I understand, right? This is like one of those riddles where they say there's two people, one is telling the truth, one is lying, right? And you can tell by the answer who's the one. So they look like this. They say, if you're saying Baal Mum, then we're going to be concerned that you're lying. Why? Because as I said before, Mishum de Kasharile, because he matured it, maybe he matured it because he got money for it. Elatam amai. But if the answer is, right, then you have to say, well, I'll pay you if you know. If the person gives the answer that it's a tam, then it's okay to accept his opinion because you're not worried that he's lying, right? Because again, the whole worry that he's lying is to give you the answer you're looking for. But now they're going to say no because, right, elatam amai, dim kain, ate lim, Ate lemichshede va'amre hay baal mum tamhu v'hay dekasharile mishum igra. There's another concern with the tam. What could you possibly say? You could say that maybe it was a baal mum, and the guy said it's a tam. Why would he say it's a tam? Because he wants you to come back again and pay him another time, because really it's blemished, right? Or maybe he'll get another blemish. And you'd rather get paid more. You see that this person already trusts you, so you know that he'll come back to you, and then you can get paid a second time. So now the Gemara rejects this and says, "Ihachi tam nami amre baal mumhu v'hadelo kasharile sever kihecha." Oh, sorry, I didn't do this right. No, sorry, I read this wrong. Bishma baal mum. Sorry. I read the, okay, start again. Bishlam abal mumishum to kashari, right? He matured it. El atam amai, right? But at tam, what would be the concern? Dim ken ate lemich shadeva amre hai bal mum tamhu? What, you're worried that he's going to tell you it's a tam and it's really a bal mum? Bahai de kashari le mishum, second. Bahai de kashari le, and the, one second, I'm reading this not correctly. Amai. No, the imken ate the michshade. Okay, I have to go back and read the question. I read the question wrong. Sorry. The Mishnah says, Bein tam bein muad, right? So now, the Gemara asks, Bishlama baal mum mishum de kasharile. We understand, right? This is, go back to my Shatnez example. You go to a Shatnez lab, you pay no matter what they tell you. The Gemara first assumes, why would you be getting paid? The only reason you get paid for a service is because you're actually helping someone. You don't get paid for a service if you're hurting them, right? Or you're preventing them from eating the animal. So they're suggesting, they're saying, Bishlam, I understand why he would get paid if it's a baal mum. Bishum de kasharile, because he matured him something, right? It's almost like saying you only would pay the Shatnez lab if they tell you it's okay. But if they tell you it's forbidden, you wouldn't pay them, right? To us, it's preposterous to think that way because you're paying for a service.
Paying for a judgment.
But here they're saying that you're paying for a benefit, right? In the Gemara, they're always talking about, are you deriving benefit, right? There's value to deriving benefit. So first they're saying, we understand theory about getting paid would be if he would say you're a baal mum. But if you're a tam, why would he even, if you say it's a tam and the guy can't check it, why would you even get paid? Because you haven't helped them at all. So now they say, no, the reason you get paid in either direction would be because de'im king, if you only paid for a baal mum, if they said baal mum, then we're going to start suspecting you that you're lying. Okay, this is, I'm sorry, I misread it. I got confused for a minute. So I have to go back because the Mishnah says, Ila b'yavne would get paid four, right, four yisarot for b'ma'adaka, six for b'ma'adasa, whether it's tam, whether it's mu'ad. So now the question is, why is he getting paid bichlal if it's a tam? And now the Gemara answers, the reason why he gets paid if it's a tam is because if you only paid him for baal mum, then what's he going to do? He's going to obviously rule that it's a baal mum in order to get his payment. That's the concern, okay? I got confused with the concern that people were lying in the potential, the way we understand, if you remember. The first part of the Mishnah was, maybe people are lying to give you the answer that you want, and that's why we don't trust them. The second thing was, it has nothing to do with that we suspect them, it's just that you can't pay someone for these kind of services. So now, they say, But if you're not suspected that you're going to lie, then, right, you would get paid either for a balmum or, for, right, you would have to get paid for a tam because otherwise people, again, will start to suspect you that you're lying. So then they say, what do you mean? They could suspect you also the other way, right? You could say, okay, so again, let's read it inside. So bishlamam balmum mishum tekasharile. But tam amai, right, why would you get paid for that? So they say no. Because if you only got paid for balmum, im kenate lemichshede, people will say, va'amre, hi balmum tamu. The guy might have said, right, that the balmum is really a tam, but the guy said it was a balmum just so he'd get his payment. V'hai tekasharile, and the reason why he matched it was mishum igur, because he wanted to get paid. So then they say, ihachi tam nami. If that's the case, you might also lie and say that a tam is a balmum, that a balmum is a tam. Why? Amre, right, tam nami amre balmum hu. You could actually have a case of a tam and say it's a balmum. Sorry, the opposite. Tam nami amre balmum hu. V'hai de lo kashare sever kiechi de lishkol igre zimna achrite. You might actually take a real balmum and call him a tam just so that people will come back and pay you an additional time. So then they say, no, that can't possibly be. Why? Because chad zimne tekinu le rabbanan. Tre zimne lo tekinu le rabbanan. This is fascinating. The Gemara says that the rabbis instituted, in a case where they allowed you to get paid, you can only, this is interesting how, this is like the way the government controls certain, you can't charge certain prices for certain items. The government controlled how the payment schedule worked when you checked the bechor. If you check a bechor, and you checked him once, okay, this is like you go to a private doctor, often they tell you within the next 6 months you can come for free, right? You paid 1,000 shekels for your one visit, but at least you get a follow-up within 6 months. So the rabbis instituted that once you checked one animal, that's it. The next time the guy gets paid, right, the next time the guy comes to check that same animal, you can't get paid a second time for that, okay? Once you, right, that's your ticket. Once you've paid once, you don't have to pay again. So now, based on this, Tosfot asks a really good question. Tosfot says that if now, okay, he says, based on this, so if you look at Tosfot, Trezim ne lot kinu le rabban on the top Tosfot, v'item akate amre tamhu, v'hai deshari le lefisha eno rotse litroch pam acheret. Maybe he actually will take a tam and say it's a balmum because he's worried if he says it's a tam, you might come back and bother him again, right? Mm-hmm. You might come back within those 6 months, right? Like the doctor visit. He doesn't want you coming back because then he's going to have to check for free. He doesn't want to do work for free. So Tosfot gives two possible answers. He says, you could, yesh lamar, shelo chivu chachamim liroto pam acheret, ela de'im ra'u de'no yachol litol alav sachar. The rabbis didn't say, it's not like a doctor. The doctor's saying, you can come back within 6 months and I commit that I will see you again for free. Here the rabbi said, you just can't charge. But you could say, no thanks, I don't want the job. I'm not willing to check it for free. Okay? It's just the rabbi said, you can't take two payments so that you don't start lying, so that the guy would come back again. But it's not that you have to. And also, and this just gets to, again, this is all, why is it so fascinating? It's what do we suspect people are going to lie about, right? And what would they do for money? And that's why the second answer is, there, we're not worried you're going to lie so that they don't bother you again and you'd have to waste your time. Time, people won't lie about. They'll only lie for money. To gain money, they'll lie. But in this case, as the rabbis already said, you're not going to gain money, so he's not going to lie in order to just not do the job again. So they keep like flipping, maybe a lie for this, maybe a lie for that, and then you have to evaluate, well, what things are people likely to lie for and what are they not? And only for money, but not for headache or some time. People wouldn't lie to avoid spending his time on something. Again, whether you agree with all these answers or not is a good question, right? What are people, again, also this might be something that changes over time or changes by the person. What people, yeah, but again, the Gemara always tries to take the general populace and what would you think people would be willing to lie for or not.
What's interesting is that they don't, this has so many applications in modern life, but they don't take into account, like, his feeling of his credibility as a mumcheh.
Yeah, right. Right. It doesn't relate to him being a mumche, will people suspect. But again, this is where I got a drop confused, is when we're talking about this.
So he might want to rule honestly so that people
think. Right, because we really are talking within the mumche case, which is strange. If we're talking within the mumche case, why we're still worried about him lying.
How many people in modern times do things with total sincerity and honesty, and yet they're looked at suspect, you know, people are suspect that they were motivated by it.
Right, it's true.
You can't know.
Right. There's always concern with judges and other things that there's other things motivating. It's the biggest, you know, issue really. Okay. I was thinking, you know, the whole previous mission is about, you know, malpractice insurance. That's really what it's about. You know, do you have to take responsibility? And therefore, if you do, then, you know, like now, people will sue you for malpractice. Okay. New Mishnah. Hanotel scharo ladun dinav betelin. So just like if you take money for checking a bechor, right, then it's irrelevant, right? People can't rule based on what you did. Likewise, if you take sachar to judge, your judgments are betelin, meaning you can't get paid to be a judge. Lahaid, if you take money to be a witness, edotav betelin. We don't accept your testimony. Now this, it's a bit of a caveat here. You can pay a witness to come witness an event. Like let's say you want to take out a loan and you want a witness to be there, or you want to loan someone money, right, more likely, and you want a witness to be there, you can pay a witness to be there. But here we're talking about where somebody witnessed something that happened, they happened to be there, and now you pay them to come to court to testify. You're not allowed to do that, and we don't accept his testimony. Lahazot ulekadesh mema, lahazot ulekadesh. If we hire you to prepare the mechatat, or to, you know, the paraduma, the water with the ashes of the paraduma, or to sprinkle the waters, meimav meima'ara afro eper makle. Okay, the water and the ashes are considered nothing. Okay, we basically ignore what you did. It's irrelevant. Im haya kohen, if, let's say, you need a kohen to do something, okay, you bring him to judge your case, for example. And mitam'eu mitrumato, it should be differently. Vitim ehu mitrumato. And because he came, he had to, let's say, walk through an area where there was a dead body and he became tamei met or something. Okay? Well, we'll see exactly what it is. But somehow he became tamei in the process and he couldn't eat his truma. Machilo umashko v'sacho. Okay? So you can't pay him to be your judge or your aide or whatever it might be. But if you caused him a loss, this is like paying for transportation, we're going to get to, okay? You can pay him food, okay? Because now he can't eat his truma food. And it's more expensive to buy chulin than truma. Truma is always very cheap to get. Like if you're a kohen and you don't have any food, you can buy truma, but truma sells for very little money because there's not a big demand for it. And sacho, you can, you know, also he needs like to anoint himself, okay? Also, I guess, I don't know why that fits in here. But anyway, if you cause him some sort of loss, so you have to compensate him for that, even though you can't actually pay him a salary. V'maya zaken, and if he was old, markiveu al hachamor, here come nisiot, you pay him for his travel expenses. V'noten lo scharo kipoel. And you pay him, now all of a sudden we get to, well, you can actually pay in some way. And even though this sounds like it's talking only about the old person, we're now going to see it really refers to all these cases. They can get paid, okay, the amount of money, we're going to talk about this in the Gemara, we've seen this before, this concept of kipoel, or kipoel batel, that he gets paid the amount of money that he's prevented from working during the time that he's doing that job. Okay? So, the assumption here, and the Gemara is immediately going to start with a proof, which is going to lead also to the next case, which we didn't really discuss, which is not only can you not judge or be a witness or do, you know, the paraduma stuff, but also you can't take salary for teaching Torah. Okay? Minani mile. So where do we get this from? Amar v'yuda amar rav da amar kra re'ei limadati etchem. Okay, I have to read the whole pasuk. It's from Dvarim Perek Dalet. Re'ei limadati etchem chukim u'mishpatim kasher tzivani Hashem Elokai. Okay, I'm teaching you the chukim u'mishpatim the way God taught me. What does that mean? Ma ani b'chinam. I learned from God. I didn't get right? God didn't get paid for teaching me. Af atem bechinam. You also are going to get, right, are going to, number one, learn from me bechinam, and also you're not going to be able to teach others for pay. Okay? Tanya Nami Halchi, Brita that supports this. Kasher tzivani Hashem Elokai, ma'ani bechinam, af atem bechinam. Okay? So just like here comes the Brita, same thing. The Brita continues. Uminayin she'im lo matza bechinam, she'ilameh besachar. But how do you know that if, right, there's no, in Israel, let's say you get free education, but if you're in Chutz La'aretz and there's no free education and you have to pay to learn, how do you know that you can actually pay to learn? Because there's two issues here. There's number one, you can't charge money as a teacher, but that also means that you also have to learn, right? You can't pay to learn. So how do you know that if you can't find anyone to teach you for free, that you can learn b'sachar? Talmud Lamar, emet kana. Okay, it's from Mishle, right? Emet kine. Purchase, right? Acquire, which sounds like with money, emet. That means that you can. Uminayin shelo yomar, kishem shelamadatiya b'sachar, kach alamdenu b'sachar. How do you know that you can't say, well, look, I pay for my education, so therefore I can charge for me to educate others? It's the two-way street, right? Even though theoretically, no one's really allowed to charge. If people do charge and you have no other way to do it, so then you can pay. But you still can't charge money for yourself to pay to teach others. Talmud Lamar, emet kine va'al timkor. Okay, the pasuk, now they're going to read the rest of the pasuk, is, but al timkor chokhma umlosar ubina. Don't sell your wisdom. Okay, this obviously raises major questions, right? We've actually seen this figure before. How can we possibly, right, then how do teachers make money? And how do, right, if we don't allow teachers to make money, we're not going to have teachers. And the other issue before we even get there is, how do we get from this pasuk, which talks about teaching, to judging, witnesses, you know, blemishes, telling about blemishes, about the hazaot, kiddush me'merak, the mechatat. Where do we jump from there to all those things? So Rashi says that this is really talking about limud and hora'ah, and it would therefore include anything that's kind of like that. You could even put paradum in that category, but edut would kind of be out of that category, according to Rashi. In other words, according to Rashi, you can't really learn that you can't testify for someone and get paid for it based on this verse. You'd have to say that was for a different reason. The Torah includes even the Ha'id, and he basically says that this is a paradigm for all mitzvot, and testifying is a mitzvah. If you know testimony, you don't come forward and testify, you know, it's a problem. So therefore, it would just be a general catch-all for any mitzvah. So now, where do we get to this heter of people taking money for all these things? So first of all, the heter is already in the Mishnah, which says, notein lo scharo, right, that you can get paid, you know, what we call schar batala, which would then, you could say, you know, if you don't have any other, some people say, there's all different ways of understanding it. If you have no other way to get paid, okay, you have no other job, if this is your only job. It could be the Darkei Moshe, which is the Rama, his commentary on the Torah. He says, if you're doing it lechvoda Torah and not for your own benefit, then you have the right intent, basically, then we allow it. In other words, what this really means is you can't take advantage and use it just to make money. But if this is what you do, right, and you're doing it for the covet of Torah, then it's allowed. We also use the term schar batala. It's that we're not actually paying you for what you're doing. We're paying you for what you're not doing to compensate you for your loss, for the fact that you can't hold another job. Some people say a rav ha'ir, okay, like a he can't take on another job because it will be embarrassing. That the Rav Ir, let's say, goes around sweeping the streets to make money, that would be a huge embarrassment. The Kesef Mishnah provides, his commentary on the Rambam provides a whole different perspective. Not to say that this is really allowed. In other words, all those kind of say that it's allowed because it's Har Batala and, you know, we kind of deal with it in that way. He says it's really not allowed. However, he uses the verse that comes up, for example, we're not supposed to write down Torah Shebaal Peh, and look, we have a huge book written of Torah Shebaal Peh. Why is that? Because the famous pasuk, Eit laso la'Hashem eferu Torah-techa. Things got so bad that there was no choice but to do this, and they basically overruled the halacha. And that's what he says happens here. He said, look, people have been doing this for generations and generations, getting paid for teaching. And it must be because there's no choice. Right? In other words, otherwise we lose all the Torah because who else is going to teach it if, you know, if they're not going to get paid for it? And therefore, his approach is to basically say, well, this halacha just doesn't exist anymore. Right? We've overridden it. Just kind of a different approach. It's also to say that it's b'dieved and that it's not really, right? And in that case, you'd have to say, well, if you can manage without, then you shouldn't really charge money for teaching. Okay, anyway, we'll stop with that. It's a very interesting issue that obviously is, you know, heavy issue for, especially for teachers. Okay. L'hazot u'l'kadesh l'kadesh me'mav me'ma'ara afro efer makle. Okay, so now we're going back to this Hazaa and the Mechatat. U'riminhu, we have a source that contradicts this. There's a Mishnah in Kiddushin, end of the second parak. Ha'mekadesh b'mechatat be'efer chatat harezo mekudeshet. If you betroth a woman, you have to betroth her with something that has monetary value. So if you betroth her with the waters of the chatat, or the efer that's used, the ashes of the paraduma, that's a good betrothal. Afal pi shehu Yisrael. Okay, this line about the Yisrael, there's two ways of interpreting it. One is that it has to do with the beginning part of the Mishnah, which talked about hamikadesh betrumot ubemasrot. So, and that, let's just assume that it refers to there, because that's the simpler explanation. Rashi just says, no, it could relate to this. It's talking about a Yisrael, right? Even though the Kohanim generally deal with the Kiddushin and the Hazaah, therefore it says Afili Yisrael. Anyway, the main part of this is that what? You see here that you can benefit from Mechatat and the Efer Chatat, which means if you can benefit from it, then in theory you can get paid for doing it. Because what is it, right? This says it has actual value to it. You know, in theory you could sell it, it sounds like, because if you betroth a woman with it, it means she could kind of do something with it. It has monetary value.
Oh, it also has to mean that he owned it himself. Otherwise,
right, he has to own it. Right, right. Otherwise,
since when are they marketing?
Right, it seems a little odd that they'd be marketing this. So we're going to see. So Amar Baye, Abaye is going to explain this mission not to mean the way you think it means. Amar Baye lo kasha, kam bischar hava'a umiloi, kam bischar hazaa v'kiddush. When we were talking about in our Mishnah, it was getting paid for mixing it, right? For doing the actual act of, you know, of the sprinkling or the, you know, of the mixing of it and making it sanctified. That you can't get paid for. That has no monetary value. But when the Mishnah was talking about betrothing a woman based on that, what they meant is if you work and your job is to bring the water to prepare the mechatat or to bring the ashes, that's a job that you can get paid for, okay? And that's what they meant, that the woman's betrothed by the salary, not, and that answers your question, Naomi, that's that. So the question is, what's really the distinction here? Some people say that the mixing of it, there's no physical exertion, so there's really no value, and that's why you can't get paid for it. You can get paid for carrying it, because that's an actual physical, you're physically exerting yourself. Some people say it's about the main mitzvah you can't get paid for, but preparations for the mitzvah you can get paid for. It's machshirei mitzvah. And that's the distinction between them. Okay, so therefore the Rambam says, that's what the difference is, and daikanami dekatani, you can even infer that from the wording. Because hacha lahazotu lekadesh, in our Mishnah it says, to, right, it says to sprinkle and to sanctify. And hatam katani hamekadesh b'mechatat u'be'efer chatat. The stress is not on the act, but on the item, which means, what does it mean about the item? Oh, you're carrying the item, or you're bringing it. Shema mina. Im haya kohen tim'eu mitrumato v'chule. Iu gufi hecha azel. Now they say like this. So what does it mean that the kohen was metame? The assumption is that in order for the kohen to get there, he had to pass through a field that had tumah in it. So they say, well, it's one thing, it's true, the kohen had to get there for your purpose, but a kohen, it's usher for him to be tameh lemed. A kohen can never, let's say he had to walk through a cemetery. Would a kohen walk through a cemetery to get there? No, right? How could he possibly do that? You can't bring yourself to become tameh. So what do they answer? Lebeit hapras derabanan. It's talking about a case not where there was tumah d'oraita, there's tumah derabanan. In other words, the rabbi said a kohen's not supposed to walk through a beit hapras. A beit hapras is a place, the field that was plowed, that potentially had dead bodies underneath. But the dead bodies at this point are broken up, and they're likely very small. And they say, "De'amar Rav Yehuda Amarav, minapech adam beit hapras v'holech." You can walk through a Beit HaPras as long as you start blowing. You blow, and then the assumption is that if there's big bones, they'll kind of be kicked up and you'll see them, and then you'll make sure not to walk on them. And if there's small bones, right, you won't even, they'll be too small to even be problematic. And therefore, as long as you blow as you're walking, you're allowed to walk through it. So then what they say is basically the Kohen, now here you have a strange thing. It becomes, because it's Asur Drabanan to walk through a Beit HaPras, so it's only Asur Drabanan, so the rabbis allow the Kohen to walk through as long as he's Minapech, although some people say even not, but we'll stick with that interpretation. As he's Minapech, however, he still can't eat Truma. Yes, he's allowed to be Tamei Lameid in this case, because it's only, we're only concerned Durabanan that he's Tamei Lameid. We don't really think it's going to end up becoming Tamei Lameid. It's only the rabbis forbade it. However, he's still going to be Asur to eat Truma after walking through this Beit HaPras, because maybe he was Tamei Lameid. So there's two issues. There's, number one, can he become Tamei Lameid knowingly? Well, he's not knowingly becoming Tamei Lameid, so it's okay. However, we still treat him as if he was Tamei Lameid, Le'inyan Truma. So therefore, you've messed him up from eating Truma, and you have to compensate him for that. And additionally, Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ami, Mishmeid Rabbi Yehuda Amar, Beit HaPras Nidash Tahor. Right? If it was plowed, then it's Tahor, and it's not an issue, there's no issue of Tumah there. That's where we see that Beit HaPras is only Durabana. Inami, or you could say, it's not that it was Tumat Meit that he became Tameh from, but Bishar Tumot Olo Mizhar Alayu. Kohanim, it's not forbidden for them to be Tameh Sheretz, so it could be he became Tameh Sheretz, and that's why he now can't eat Truma. Okay, the only, right, the Isra for a Kohen is just Tumat Meit. It's not a sore for him to Shar Tumot. Im haya zaken markivo al-chamor. Tana kipoel batel, and Amar Abaye, what does that mean, kipoel batel? Right, Armish just said, you get paid kipoel. What does poel mean? Ah, kipoel batel, like I explained, it means because you're not working, right? How much? And then Abaye says, kipoel batel shelo tamalecha, which means that you have to take into consideration all sorts of things, which means, what job were you doing otherwise, and how much would you pay? And that's number one, you have to take into consideration how high the salary was, and number two, how hard the work is. And there's some sort of equation there based on how hard the work was and how much money you got paid, how much would you be willing to sit and do nothing, right? If it's a very hard job, but you get paid a lot for it, so maybe, you know, since it's so hard, on the other hand, you get paid a lot, so you're not going to want to work, but, you know, you're not going to want to not work because you're getting paid so much. On the other hand, it's really hard work, so maybe you would, right? But let's say you're a jeweler, which you get paid a lot of money for less work, let's say. I don't know, not to offend jewelers, right? But that was an example one of the Mefreshim gave. Like, you sell things that are very expensive, so you're, you know, you can sell them for a lot of money, and it's not, I would say, physically hard labor. So because of that, right, you might be willing, you know, you're not going to be so willing to sit and do nothing because it's not even such hard work as it is. But if it's really hard work, you know, and then you have to, or let's say it's really hard work and you make no money, you know, very little money, so then you'd obviously be more happy. So there's some sort of calculation there about how to figure it out. There's some people that provide different interpretations about how to calculate it, but most people say that's what it is. It's based on those issues. Hachashud ala bechorot. Okay, first of all, what does it mean you're chashud al bechorot? So different interpretations. Either you're a kohen who we saw, somebody saw once inflicting a mum on an animal on purpose, right, which you're not allowed to do. Or you're not a kohen necessarily, but you're selling bechorot as if they're chulin, right? You're shechting them when they have no mum, and then you're selling them as if they're regular chulin. So that's a problem. So if you're chashud ala bechorot, either for that reason or for that reason, even a tzvi, you can't buy. Now, a tzvi, there's no din of bechor, it's a chaya, not a behema. Right? Bechor is only by behema, but you still can't buy basar tzvi because it looks like, right? There's no, when you buy a piece of meat, it's not so clear whether it came from a tzvi or it came from a para. So, therefore, you can't even buy basar tzvi because you might end up buying by accident basar behema, and then, you know, he's chashud, he's selling you bechor. Or he's the Kohen who's concerned maybe he inflicted a blemish in it. Velo orot she'enan avudim, and not hide that wasn't tanned. Rabbi Lezer omer lochim mimenu orot shel nekeva. Rabbi Lezer says you can take from a female because there's no dina b'chor. Tanakama obviously disagrees with that. We're going to get to the differences between them. Ve'ein look, and we'll also get to why orot she'enan avudim. We'll get to that in the Gemara. Ve'ein lochim mimenu tsemer meluban v'tso'i. Not bleached and not dirty wool. Aval lukchim imenu tvi ubegadim. You can take threads that are spun and clothing. So now they're going to get to the differences. Basar tzva'im demichlach b'de'egla, because people, you might confuse it with an egla. V'lo orot she'inan abudin, ha'abudim zavninan. Right? It seems clear. If it was avud, then you'd be, if it was tanned already, you'd be able to buy it. Im ita de'bechor hava, lo hava tarach be. Savar ishamu be'rabana, mifsidu li minei. He says, why would you be able to buy it? Because no one's going to bother tanning it if they know that the rabbis could come along and figure it out at some point. And then, right, you've put in all this effort. You're not going to put an effort into something that then they're going to take away and say, oh, by the way, this is a bechor, and throw it in the garbage. So it would be a huge hefset. So you wouldn't do that. And you might shecht it and sell it to someone, but you're not going to start tanning it. Rabbi Lezer omer, lokchim imenu orot shel nekeva. My time, made the idea. Because it's obvious. Everybody knows, based on the anatomy of the animal, so you have a hide, you could tell whether there was a male organ there or there wasn't. You could tell by the shape of the hide. And that's why it's obvious. So now they say, well, Tanakama, what's Tanakama going to say then? Why does he not think it's allowed? Im ken zachar nami chayek lezichrute. Va'amar achbari machluha. You could cut away the part where the male anatomy is, and you could claim that the mice ate it, and then you'd be selling a male, right? And then you could say, oh, well, yeah, you can't tell if it's male or female. Well, you know, it's female, I promise, you know, and then just the mice ate it. V'idach, why isn't Rabbi Elazar worried about this? Achbari made the idea. People could tell the difference between if it was cut or if it was eaten by mice. Okay. Think of a book I have where the mice eat the cloak, Charlie eats a cloak, and you know, you see these little bite marks all over the cloak. You know, it's not the same as cutting it with a knife. Ein lochem imenu tsemer meluban utsoi. Hashtet tsemer meluban lo zavninan tsoi mebaya. If already we say you can't buy bleached, where again, it's like the tanning. You did something to it, and yet we still say bleaching is not enough of an action. So of course, dirty wool that you didn't even do anything to would obviously be a sur. So why would you even need to say it? Ela chada katane. It really is one thing. It's semer miluban mitso ato. It doesn't mean semer miluban and, right, clean and dirty. No, it means bleached from its dirt. Last line for today. Avalokchim imenu tvi ubagadim. You can get things that are, you can have spun thread and clothing. So again, hashta tvi zavnina bagadim ebaya. Once you say spun, well, isn't clothing prepared from spun thread? So therefore, why would you even need to say that? My begadim namte. Begadim means felt clothes. There could be clothes made of felt that you didn't need to spun thread for it. And then it's basically on the same level as, you know, this, again, it goes back to the tanning, that once you've already put in all this effort, you're not going to put in all this effort if it might have been a bechor and it's going to get thrown in the garbage anyway.